This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3194 for Thursday, the 29th of October 2020. Today's show is entitled The Count and the Questions and is part of the series Linux in Laws. It is hosted by Monochromec and is about 68 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is Linux in Laws Season 1 Episode 16. This is Linux in Laws, a series on free and open source software. Black humor.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Is Linux in Laws, a podcast on topics around free and open source software, any associated contraband, communism, the revolution in general, and whatever else fancies your tickle. Please note that this and other episodes may contain strong language, offensive humor, and other certainly not politically correct language. You have been warned. Our parents insisted on this disclaimer. Happy Mum! Thus, the content is not suitable for consumption in the workplace, especially when played back on a speaker in an open-plan office or similar environments. Any minors under the age of 35, or any pets, including fluffy little killer bunnies, your trusted guide dog, unless on speed, and cute T-Rexes or other associated dinosaurs. This is Linux in Laws. Series 1, Episode 16, with the count and the questions. Dracul, how is life down in Transylvania?
Ah, the life is a bit sparse on the blood side. It's very thin. Let me just check my my cupboard for some supplies. Ah, no, that one is still alive. Excellent, excellent. I'll go for that one. Just bear with me for a moment while I have my lunch.
How is treating you down there? Still out and about with the axes and the linchpins?
The linchpins, yes, and also the Salvatore, he's on the doorstep.
Why is that?
Because we moved to Italy for some reason, not Transylvania.
How come?
I don't know, you are speaking in Italian.
Dear listeners, welcome to the Transylvania of Linux In-Laws. Yes, you've tuned to the right station. This is the long-awaited Halloween special. Why don't you introduce us to the concept, what we have in mind for the next, 24 hours?
The concept for today, that's not me. Yes. So today we have a number of questions sent in by our listeners.
Excellent.
And we have a special on the subject of Halloween and how this relates to technology, people in technology, and open source.
Excellent, excellent. And of course, as you can hear, dear listeners, no expenses were spared on sound effects front. And yes, Mom, thank you.
You're welcome.
Excellent. And today, actually, we do have a very special treat for our cherished listeners. we're going to do a full-blown episode. That's what you're listening to now. And there will be a B-Sides. This B-Sides episode will only be hosted on linuxinlaws.eu. It's a once-off. Simply due to the fact that we had so many questions. We said that we can't do all the show, because in that case the show would be approximately 24 hours long. So we condensed them into two parts. One part we're going to tackle now, plus a little bit probably on humor, in addition to humor, sorry. And then we have the B-sides, which is another good chunk of questions, and then we're done for this episode. And then we will resume the normal schedule afterwards, as usual. So that you know, the link to the B-sides will be in the show notes once this goes live. And as I said, the B-sides will not be hosted on Hacker Public Radio. This is once off, but rather on linuxinlaws.eu. So Martin, why don't you get us started with the first question?
Yes. The 24 hours is not a good idea because I have to sleep in the daytime. So this is why we purely stuck to 12, of course.
Is your microphone in the coffin not working?
Let me just go and have a look. Oh. Nope, she's still there. Hang on.
Sounded very much like your wife.
No, this is just a snack. That's not my wife.
They are not the same, are they?
Don't mention Emma. Yeah, she's not here.
No, but she has written in, actually, but more on that later.
She's an active writer.
Absolutely.
She must be our only listener. There we go. Right, where were we? So, you would question like a question. Test. Yes. Okay. Any particular question you would like me to address? Or there's quite a few, as I mentioned.
Yes, I know, but just pick one. I don't know. And then we can discuss that in an open source context. I found the World Wildlife Fund thing very good. I just had a glimpse at this.
You found the what? Good?
The World Wildlife question there.
Wildlife question.
No, wasn't there a question with regards to actually our favorite subject at hand, nocturnal species and animals and stuff?
Not the Grumpy Old Codus you're referring to here.
No, of course not.
Ah, okay.
No, it's a question, bear with me. Exactly, sorry. I think it's in an envelope labeled 16, and I think if I recall correctly, that question was sent in by a guy called Vlad Dracul, also known as the Transylvanian Impaler, which I find quite strange because he actually writes, "Do I really exist? As in, do vampires really exist? If so, do they count as a protected species? If so, what does the World Wildlife Fund do about their survival?" Vlad, that's a very interesting question.
It is.
But I'm not sure why you are writing in, because...
And I'm not entirely sure how this is related to Linux in-laws, but we can have a go, right?
Absolutely. Well, they do exist, of course, yes.
They do exist, otherwise they wouldn't be recording this episode. So,
never mind writing letters.
Indeed. Okay, protected species. Well, there aren't many of them, I think.
Well, there's werewolves. There's vampires. There is trolls, I think.
I don't think trolls are around the same category there, but
witches.
I'm slightly confused about which wizards we're talking about now.
No, yes, maybe.
I thought we were talking about vampires.
Yes.
Are they a protected species?
I think so. I mean, they're on the brink of extinction, no?
I think they've been going for quite a few thousands of years, so they seem to be doing quite well on survival rates. I don't think they need any protecting, personally, but...
Well, it's just, I don't know.
Opinion.
I mean, thousands of years, are you sure?
Oh, yes. They live forever, right? They just drink a bit more blood.
Yeah, but I mean, this whole vampire thing goes back to, really, somebody called Vlad Dracul, who happened to live in Transylvania, if I'm not completely mistaken. As in the modern form of the vampires, anyway. I think they were in Babylon or something like this. As in ancient times, there was also a concept of a nocturnal creature sucking life, sucking blood out of living people.
Like but a speedhead.
So I reckon the concept is way older than just Vlad Dracul, but I think that's prominent.
Here's a question lore. For you. Here's a question for you. Do mosquitoes count as vampires?
No, they don't, because if a mosquito bites you, you don't turn into a mosquito, right? And more specifically, you don't live forever. So no, mosquitoes wouldn't be vampires, Martin.
Okay, it depends how you classify that.
What classifies a vampire?
Well, it's a blood-sucking animal. Is what you...
So far I'm with you. But there's a couple of other traits that classify as a vampire, though.
Well, they live in coffins?
Only during the day, yes, correct. They can't stand sunlight, as we all know. Crossing water is difficult.
With your biological background, how does that work?
There is a documentary called Blade 1 and 2 and 3 that goes into details.
Indeed.
The way it works essentially, once you turn, you have something like a anaphylactic shock. Once your ultraviolet ray reaches your skin, it's quite down to a molecular level it's like a massive sunburn essentially, only with the side effect that you die instantly.
Nice.
That's the way it works.
Yeah, so that relates to question 29. Why is silver effective on vampires?
Let me actually recount this. It is actually explained in another documentary called Vlad the Impaler or something like this. Essentially, when Judas Iscariot, before he hanged himself, basically, he got 13 silver coins. And the connection between Judas and Vlad escapes me. Maybe it does. There's some connections, people. Look it up. Or maybe Judas actually... Sorry, I think Judas was the first vampire, something like this. Because once he hanged himself, he couldn't die, and lived on as an eternal curse, so to speak. And I think this may be the connection between silver and vampires. And needless to say, as we all know, werewolves are actually just a kind of offspring or other variant of vampires. Exactly. Pretty much like the Vulcans and the Romulans are related, right? They go back to a kind of common ancestor. Yes, something like this. Same goes for werewolves and vampires, and that's exactly the reason why they can't stand each other. So the easiest way to kill actually is a member of either species is just basically to carry a silver bullet with you in a loaded gun, of course.
Well, yes, a bullet without a gun is pretty useless, but, okay. Another related question, number 32 is, can vampires, are they susceptible to COVID-19 when they drink the blood of a similarly infected person?
The counter question is, Martin, doesn't matter because they are eternal, as in they can't die unless being hit by sun at all, so the bullet or bad jokes, like Trump jokes or something.
Mm-hmm.
The answer is no.
They are obviously also vaguely bat-related, so a bat or a originated disease would probably not harm them. Okay, fair enough. Good point.
Well, they can turn into wolves, so if a bat-related disease would hit them, they would simply either assume a human shape or would simply turn into wolf, and that's the bat disease gone from a biological perspective.
That all sounds pretty clever. Excellent. Maybe we should all become vampires. On that subject, your modern-day choice of vampire, who would you choose and why?
My modern... I don't quite understand the question, but maybe you can elaborate, Martin.
I guess we're kind of moved on to part two of the quickfire, but this is a similar scenario. Well, I mean, you can have the choice of a politician, a media mogul, computing mogul, an open source project leader. You may not, you consider a vampire. Which one?
Are there any? Choose?
Okay. Which one?
Well, good no, question.
These are hypothetical questions.
I see.
For you to answer.
I see. We're trying to confuse our listeners, right? So these are not written in questions anymore.
No, no, this was question 35. Did you not get it?
No, I didn't.
This is something I only got a few again. Of them. Your postfix is always broken.
Here we go again. No, my postfix is not broken, Martin, unlike some other DIN DNS-based systems.
You're running postfix on DIN DNS?
No, I'm not. No, Martin, I'm not. Okay.
Anyway, so what would your answer be?
I reckon I would go for Boris Johnson.
Oh, right. Interesting choice.
What about you?
And why? You have to say why as well, obviously.
Ah, sorry. Because he basically pulled Brexit off and he will run the country into the ground, pretty much like Vlad Dracul did back in the olden days when he basically eliminated all the people down in Transylvania, because without blood you cannot live. And if you turn them all into vampires, and if there's no blood supply, eventually probably these vampires will starve too. In terms of dying.
Start eating the cows instead, perhaps. Or?
And once the cows are done, what do you do then?
Eat the chickens. There you go.
Yeah, but I mean, you see, Martin, the concept is eternal life. Well, life is debatable, but eternal anyway. So this is the reason actually why you saw that massive wave of people leaving Transylvania around a kind of 700 years ago. And as we all know, most of them actually went.
I don't know. I wasn't around 700 years ago. So
fair enough. But then you're not. But then you're not a politician, right?
Neither. No, that's correct. Correct. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Far from, in fact. Excellent. Okay. Would you like to pick a question next?
Yes. Somebody very. I got going back to computer science now, just basically to leave that dangerous terrain. How to crack P equals NP?
Uh-huh.
As in portable runtime equals non-portable runtime.
I thought you were talking about transistors here.
No. I'm talking about complexity theory now.
Okay.
Complexity theory, I think it's called in English, as in the theory about finite state automata and their runtime when tackling certain classes of problems.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Like a typical non-polynomial runtime complete problem would be the traveling salesman, i.e. you have a graph and you have to find the shortest way in this graph, but you have to hit each and every node in this graph, i.e. the shortest way, or the shortest route rather, to hit all of the locations or towns on a given route.
Yeah. So the question is what again?
Are polynomial runtime and non-polynomial runtime complexity classes equivalent?
No, well, this is an unsolved problem, right? So,
well, yes, Martin, that goes back to university days. Probably you can recall that lecture when you still kind of made up your mind whether to attend this or not.
Hang on a minute. You've got an unsolved problem. Thanks for this. why
in hindsight, it would have been better, Martin, to attend this lecture. But hey, you were in your early 20s and still young, right? So.
You think?
You probably had different priorities.
Only a few years ago, yeah. So, yes.
About 50.
Okay, so what is the question again?
Will this be ever proven?
Ah, well, It's the same as saying one equals zero. Is that going to ever be proven? The answer is, by definition, no.
It's. I think these are unrelated problems.
Well, this is where you're wrong.
Why?
Because you usually are.
I don't get it. I'm never wrong, Martin.
Let's see. Yeah, this is obviously not the right attitude.
Yeah,
if you're never wrong, you're never going to learn anything, are you?
Well, I know everything already, so what's the big deal?
Right.
Well,
right.
Almost.
I see. Right, so yes. You're also one of these eternal beings, like our friend Dracula.
Friend, I see. Okay. Here's one for you, Martin.
Okay.
How can I compromise quantum computers?
Yeah, well, that's quite easy, isn't it? You just turn off the cold supply and then it just blows up. So,
Martin, the question is not how to destroy a quantum computer, but rather how to compromise.
Well, it depends how you qualify.
Okay. Let me define compromise. How do you crack a quantum computer in terms of how can you break into it without breaking it, essentially, i.e. how can you take a look at its inner workings and then it's still usable afterwards? Like you break into an ordinary computer system, i.e. a software system, basically, with a buffer overload or something like this.
Is there something you want to tell our listeners here?
No, I'm just making an example, right? So,
okay.
Like you break into a software by, for example, buffer overflow, but then you're still able to use that software. Uh-huh. And without you blowing it up, like formatting or partitioning the hard disk or something like this.
Hmm. It's an interesting theoretical question. I don't personally have any access to quantum computers, so I've not investigated this scenario. But in case you have, why don't you tell our dear listeners?
Well, I don't think it's that complicated, because essentially you just take another quantum computer. For example, if you want to crack quantum encryption, you better use something that is equally fast. So another quantum computer comes to mind.
Okay. This obviously requires having a quantum computer. But,
as a matter of fact, one you break into and one you use for breaking into.
Mechanisms. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, you're talking about just near Kelvin, right? It doesn't have to be absolute zero degrees Kelvin. Mm-hmm. I mean, now you can be down to, I think, 269 or something like this.
Yeah.
As in almost room temperature.
And I guess it is for us vampires. Okay. Interesting theory. But if you do ever get hold of a quantum computer, let me know and we'll have a crack at it.
There's another very interesting question that goes back to a previous episode, of course. I think that the grumpy old coders are just a Linux idlers invention. How can you prove their existence?
Okay. Oh, that's actually quite easy, isn't it? Because we just get them on the show.
Yes, indeed. But then you have another question saying, you just invented them and you're using voice doubles and whatever. No, I think they do exist.
And
the grumpy old coders are not a Linux in-laws invention. Very important. They do exist. We know them personally. Well, I know at least one of them personally.
I have met one of them, yes.
Yes, you have met one of them too, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, yes, they do run their own podcast, totally independent of Linux in-laws. And the reason why we give them so many plugs is essentially we love them, right? So that's straightforward. Grumpy old coders, if you're listening to this, please get in touch. We're really looking forward to having you on the show.
What do you mean, if they're listening? Surely they are devoted.
Not too sure.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. We have to stop plugging in if they're not listening.
We do!
So forget about the grumpy old coders, people.
Grumpy old coders, if you want to receive further plugs, make sure that you send us questions that you are indeed listening to this podcast.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go back to the questions. Right. But you were just talking about breaking into quantum computers. How about breaking into Fort Knox to make it more profitable? And specifically using open source technology, working or not.
Oh, this is really easy. I mean, you just
take a couple of
$1 million. Right. You do a little bit of recon as in reconnaissance.
Your prerequisites are kind of great in imagination, but not that practical, really, are they? Like quantum computers,
Martin,
a couple
of billion. You're talking about one of the most hardened places on the planet.
Well, I'm not. Our listeners are asking, right? This is probably the guy in charge of security at Fort Knox asking. How do I cover myself?
The question is not how expensive it is to break into Fort Knox, but rather how you would do it using open source technology. The devil, of course, lies in the details, as usual. No, essentially, it's really safer because you do a little bit of reconnaissance using open source tools. You take a look at the parameter, as in the fence essentially that they use made up of intrusion detection systems, intrusion prevention systems. You map the infrastructure. There you find the holes, if any, and then you go through these holes. Don't bother with physical access because, as I said, it would be pretty hard to do it that way unless you have a little bit of time at your disposal.
I have a follow-up question here. How do I move a bar of gold through a internet connection?
You would need something called the teleporter, which hasn't been invented yet.
Okay, right. So not a prerequisite to have a teleporter. Okay.
No. I think there was.
I have another idea. Sorry, you can.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
There was.
I think another kind of ancient documentary called The Fly, with the guy called Jeff Goldblum. Where he tried this but failed miserably. So I think this prototype wasn't exactly the most efficient one.
Yeah. So I have an even better solution, which is to use the flux capacitor, and you go back to the time before Fort Knox was built, make a little hole in the ground and a little access hatch to where Fort Knox is going to be built, and a little tunnel, and then you can just take all the gold after they've built it.
And what does that have to do with open source?
Well, you can run a flux capacitor on open source software, sure.
Can you? Okay.
Does yours not? No. What are you running? You're running it on Windows, right?
No, I'm not.
That sounds like a recipe for failure.
No, Mark,
it's a handy tip for you to think, don't run your flux capacitor on Windows. Right, where were we?
Yeah, there's another one, very interesting question. What's the correct spelling of OS X 10.99.99? That's a very good question.
Yes, why don't we defer that one to Claudio to write in the answer for it? I think that's...
Hey, Claudio, if you're listening, please write in the answer. That's very important. If this question is not from you, that is.
Does it not say who it was from?
No, it doesn't. There's no name on the envelope.
An anonymous envelope. Wow. Okay. Excellent.
Here's another good one. Given the fact that Richard Storm is a T10, doesn't make that the whole Fossman movement evil? Martin, this is a very interesting aspect, isn't it?
It is.
I mean, imagine actually that Richard is actually a Terminator sent back from the future.
Yeah.
Discuss.
Well, my question would be, who has he come to terminate?
Proprietary software comes to mind. And by the way, he's done a very good job on this.
He has?
Oh, yeah.
Do tell.
Well, Emacs. Something called the GNU public license and so forth. Innovation.
Yeah.
As an open source movement, if that rings a bell. There's, Martin, if you don't know what open source
is,
there's a beautiful podcast called The Linux In-Laws. This is all about open source. I recommend listening to it.
Okay, so
rather than terminating
any closed source software, he's doing the opposite by creating open source software kind of. Okay. Well, I mean, that's not actually a Terminator, though, isn't it? That's more like a.
have you ever? I mean, just wondering, man. WSL 2.0 rings a bell.
Yes, it does. What about it?
Perfect. Given the fact that this is a full-blown Linux kernel running on top of something called Windows, even Microsoft these days has fully embraced the notion of open source. And WSL 2.0 is just another example, I suppose.
That doesn't really answer the question that he's not a Terminator, right? He's just a evangelist or whatever you want to call it.
He managed to break into the fortress of proprietary proprietary software on the planet called Microsoft. Mm.
Yes, okay. So, but your average burglar isn't a Terminator, right? I don't think he can be classified as a Terminator.
Well, the question says,
Richard, if you're listening, your Terminator status is failed.
The question is, given the fact that Richard M. Storm is a T10, it doesn't say if Richard is a T10.
But I think it's highly questionable. Who sent this question in?
A guy called Eric Raymond.
Okay.
At least according to the envelope. Eric, if you're listening, all is forgiven. Do continue writing. Very good. Eric, don't worry. All is forgiven. Richard has stepped down from the FSF. You're safe.
Okay. I don't know. Do you think we have sufficiently answered this question? It's not really the best question in the world, is it, to be fair?
But, yes. There's another one, actually, with regards to Cyberdyne. How can we ensure that the 45th U.S. president is not Cyberdyne's next successful project? That's actually a very valid question, isn't it?
That's a very good question. I like that one. Yeah.
It's related to open source, but doesn't matter.
I don't think Cyberdyne are that into open source, are they? as
astute listeners, of course, know. NVIDIA used to be the predecessor of something called Cyberdyne. Go back to one of the previous episodes where it's all explained. Indeed. Yes. No, it's not open source. But maybe Cyberdyne 2.0 will be. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But that's the future, right?
I mean, yes. Okay, so... how can we ensure this? I think there has to be some serious activity or action to prevent this, because it hasn't happened in the past, as we can see. So if we want to prevent this in future, then it's going to take some serious effort, in my opinion. And there's obviously... this is... What is the
45th president, yes. Yeah, I think it's a guy called... it's according to American history, this is a guy called Donald Trump. If I'm completely mistaken. Well, I mean, the answer is straightforward, right? I mean... What do you do when you open source a project? You take the source code and do what with it? You make it public, right? So that people can slice it open and take the look at the inner workings of the code.
So you're suggesting slicing open...
Exactly. So what you do with Donald Trump, you put him on the table, slice him open, and then take a look at the inner workings.
Okay. Could be a bit messy, but okay.
Doesn't matter. I mean, if this is a hybrid, as in robot technology combined with human tissue, you could be pretty sure that this might be actually Cyberdyne's work. If it's just... human tissue, well, tough luck. It's probably not Cyberdyne. But I'm sure that a guy called, what's his name? Biden, right? Biden will be more than happy about the fact that now Donald Trump is sliced open on an operating table.
Well, I mean, I think going forwards, we should probably be slicing open all the Canadas just to make sure that they're not Cyberdyne's next...
You might run into a problem with an organization called PETA, I think, PETA or something like this.
I don't know. You tell me.
You'll find the link in the show notes, people. They normally care about whales and other endangered species. Exactly. exactly. Harry, if you just continue to slice open presidential candidates, you might have an issue with them eventually.
Well,
you want to be careful on this one, that's what I'm saying.
Stick them back together again, but hey. Okay. okay, so shall I go next? Let me have a look at this next question. Ah, this is related to Cyberdyne. Anyway, how can Cyberdyne be turned? As in...
Oh, this is straightforward. Essentially, what you do
presumably is... Presumably, we mean
turn to the dark side? Yeah, no. Of course, even more simple. Simpler. You simply basically take your flux capacitor. Yes, it's straightforward. You take a flux capacitor, jump back in time on open
That's
source.
Quite handy,
the first,
flux capacitors,
yes,
aren't they?
Absolutely. Open source the first NVIDIA code base, and there you have it. That'll change the course of history. Linus Torvalds, of course, won't say fuck NVIDIA. And this is how you introduce open source to Cyberdyne.
Right. Okay. So when we interpret the question as being turned from closed software. Good point. Yes, this is obviously our job. Very good.
Here's another one. Don't know who wrote this in. Probably one of our pals. What is this Dennis character's history of running companies into the ground? And what are the Linux in-laws doing about this? Okay, for those few listeners who do not know who Dennis is our CFO, our chief financial officer, that according to Martin has a history of, or who has actually, according to history, has a history of building successful startups and all the rest of it. But was hired on a whim, actually, by Martin, without me even knowing it. So it's just...
Are you saying that you wrote this question?
No. No, I don't know.
No, it's a distinctly recognizable bit of handwriting.
No, hang on, actually. It says here, actually, that this is Dennis' mom sending this in. Interesting. Well... Dennis, mom, you should know Dennis, right? But let's tackle the second part of the question. What the Linux in-laws are doing about it. Actually, a very good question. We could terminate him, not him, but this is his contract, right? I mean, the company was Linux in-laws was doing quite well without a chief financial officer.
Well, it was until you got the contract with Rainbow Escorts, right? So, I think that's why we had to instate Dennis his role, because the expenses were getting rather out of hand on
you mean your expenses?
Rainbow Escorts usage.
Martin, if you try to expense Rainbow Escorts, this is your fault. I had a corporate account for this.
Yeah, this is what I mean. This is what Dennis was
Martin, you see, Martin, what is the first and foremost trait of a corporate account? You tell me. How does it work?
Say again. What's the what?
What is the first and foremost trait, as in character, characteristic? Thank you very much. Of a corporate account.
It is corporate.
Yes. So far, so good.
This is where you're going wrong. See, we are not a corporation.
Well, this is debatable. A corporate account, Martin, is where you confirm or assure a supplier of certain services or goods that a specific baseline of revenue will be guaranteed by buying more or less in bulk.
I see.
Hence, the prices of individual items on this account go down.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so
it's normally known as a corporate account. If you know what I mean.
Yes, it's fine.
Very good.
But, it still doesn't account for the fact that your corporate account is costing us 100 times more than my expensed items. So this is why Dennis is not too impressed with your financial management.
Martin, if you
and selling a few t-shirt is not going to if balance our bills.
If you would have,
by the way, we have
continued. T-shirt. Yes, we more on that later. Yes, let's leave the shameless commercial plugs until the very end. Okay, sorry. If you would have continued expensing individual services by Rainbow Escorts on your monthly expense claim, that would have been way more expensive than putting these and a couple of extra runs on the corporate account. Because we are actually, we are getting, or we used to get before I moved it back to my, to my payroll, not payroll, what's what I'm looking for? To my account, exactly.
You're getting paid for this? Hang on a minute, what's going on here?
You're not? Anyway. Okay, Martin, the discount address at Rainbow Escorts was 70% on this corporate account. So where you would be paying list price, more or less, with Emma and friends, like in, what was it? Like 300 quid for an hour or two? I would be paying only 30% of this on the corporate account. Do you see what I mean?
Yes, yeah, you're bulk buying. Okay,
exactly. So never mind who owns this corporate account with Rainbow Escorts. Just put it on the account, Martin. Do not expense this going forward.
This would be really handy if this email you sent with this corporate account information actually made it to myself, if your postfix wasn't broken again.
My postfix isn't broken, Martin. Your postfix is broken, apparently.
Let's call it your spam filter then, Jill.
I see.
You have an outgoing one as well. Anyway.
Hang on. There's another one actually about Rainbow Escorts. A certain Martin Visser writes in, how can I get in touch with Emma of Rainbow Escorts? And then it says, for the really desperate. Okay, fair enough. Anyway, Martin, you should know this. Why are you writing in this question?
I'm lost. Yeah, this is obviously not another Martin Visser. Me, right? Yeah. No.
Somebody used an alias. Is that it? I see.
Yeah, I think so. Yes, so moving off the Rainbow Escort subject. We didn't answer that question, of course.
No, the answer is, of course, straightforward. You could just get in touch with Martin, and Martin would put you in touch with Emma. It's really... Well,
are they a secret organization or something? Surely
No. Or you can, of course, visit Martin's newly built adult entertainment website. Which is hankypanky-martinvista.com, I think.
Excellent.
Or something like that. Anyway, use your favorite search engine. Martin Visser will probably show up on the very first search result page or something like this. Just search for Martin Visser, either porn or adult entertainment services. You'll find him. No worries.
Oh, that's useful information for our open source listeners, I'm sure. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now then, so this brings me on to a very topical question, being I have a Sicilian challenge at hand. How can I get in touch with New York City's HQs and beyond as featured in episode 8?
First of all, Martin, you should probably explain what a Sicilian challenge is.
It's a challenge in Sicily. And what does
New York have to do with it?
Well, there's a lot of them moved over there to open an Italian restaurant.
Very good. Very good, Martin. Well spotted.
And then they started putting horses' heads on people's pillows or something. I don't know.
Do they know? I see. Excellent, excellent. Very good. Of course. You want to take this, Martin, or?
Well, I think...
Since you wrote the sketch, didn't you?
We could always ask our friend Claudio.
Yes. Or we could ask a guy called Salvatore, who happens to live on this in Sicily.
Okay, do tell about Salvatore. Who is this?
Salvatore Sanfilippo. He invented something called Redis, I think.
Okay.
He lives in Sicily, doesn't he?
Is he? Okay. That's kind of handy.
Subject, yes.
Right. Indeed. So, so the answer is write to salvatore@redis.org.io.
No. This is anti. His nick is actually anti-RS, and you'll find his nick on Twitter and GitHub, I think.
Anti-res. Oh, isn't his picture also a werewolf?
A wolf, oh, certainly. A werewolf, I'm not sure.
Okay, well, that's very topical. Very topical for this episode. Maybe we should ask him.
Yeah, why don't you write him an email?
Well, I'm sure he's listening. So, Salvatore.
Salvatore, if you're listening, please do get in touch.
We need your help on this question. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Excellent. Right. Now, here's a question from Rob in Basingstoke. He's asking, what is our next month's lotto numbers?
I was just about to ask that to ask that very same question, although I don't have it in writing. Answer is straightforward, actually. Use the flux capacitor once again. Make a time jump?
No, not how. He's asking, what are they?
Ah, use a flux capacitor. Make a time jump. Write them down, bring them back. Simple. Okay. Our flux capacitors, unfortunately, are under maintenance right now, so we can't tell you, I'm afraid.
Ah, so here, this just brings me on to question 99. Where can I get hold of the blueprint for a flux capacitor?
Good question. Check out GitHub.
Okay.
Maybe it's on there, I don't know. Maybe it's on there. I'll simply break into Sabada, no worries.
That's always a good idea.
Or NVIDIA, for that matter, of course.
Yes, well, you could always go and visit Jensen in his kitchen and ask him personally.
There's another good question. Here we go. I really love the sketch about Leo's trouble with reconfiguring English history using the command line a few episodes back. Can I count more on this? Can I count on more of this?
Yes, more rewriting of history.
Yes, you can, although the dark side has been...
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead. Well, I mean, can you count on more of this? If we have our flux capacitor handy, then yeah.
Maybe the big picture is that, unfortunately, the dark side has taken a little bit of a break over the last few episodes. People, this will change. It's just a matter of, doing these sketches.
Too busy doing dark things, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, which I can't really talk about. Anyway, it doesn't matter. There will be more dark side things coming up in the very near future, so stay tuned on this one.
This is quite topical. Yeah,
this is something for you, Martin. There's another question being written in by a certain Mrs. Visser. I suspect my husband, significant other, partner, favorite pet, is having an affair. What are the means at my disposal using open source? Is that your wife writing in?
Why do you want open source for this?
Ask your wife. I don't know if she's written this. I don't know.
It just seems like there are quite a few pretty straightforward solutions for this available.
Do tell.
Require building something yourself. Like GPS trackers, breaking into phones, whatever you want to do, right?
And these are open source?
Well, they don't have to be open source, right? They just have to work for this purpose.
Well, your wife, or whoever that Mrs. Visser is, specifically asks about open source.
Well, I guess this is just a trick to get their question on the show, right? Put open source
Mrs. Visser, Mrs. Visser, it has worked. Although I do apologize about the answer because clearly this is missing the mark.
Okay, what would your answer be then? Go on.
Take a look at GitHub and other code repositories in terms of what's out there. I mean, for example, you can, of course, use an open source tracker app on your Android phone. This is straightforward, especially on a rooted device. It's not that complicated. given the fact that if
Android has an Android and a rooted Android device, then yes.
No, it's sufficient enough basically to have that person own an Android device, which can be rooted. Because essentially what you do is you take that Android device, root it yourself, and then put a tracker up on it.
Yes, the suspect
in question doesn't even have to know about it. The beauty, of course, is that Android itself is based on something, or the whole Android ecosystem is based on something called the Android Open Source Project, the AOSP. These are the open source parts of the underlying operating system, including all the Java APIs and what have you, as in the stuff that currently the highest Supreme Court in the US is debating or something. I don't know. You heard about this, Martin, right?
I don't follow politics that much, I'm afraid.
It's not politics, actually. It's open source. No. There was about, what, this week? Last week? I can't even remember. There was a final hearing or session about Oracle versus open source. Oracle versus Google, with regards to the potential copyright infringement by Google when they use the JVM API for Android.
Okay.
Makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
Never heard about it? Okay. There was a company called Sun. Sun invented Java about 26 years ago. We are not recording this in 2030, but rather in 2020, just for the reference frame. So, and then Andrew Rubenstein came along and invented something called Android, which he subsequently sold to a search company called Google. So the whole notion of an Android phone was born with the operating system. The trouble is, of course, Android uses something very similar, very resembling to something called the JVM, a Java Virtual Machine. As a matter of fact, Java was the first implementation language for Android, meaning Android did have the advantage that you could program and any app that you wanted to to develop in Java, because the API looked pretty similar to what Google invented about, as I said, 10 or 15 years prior to this. That, of course, meant that the manufacturers for apps running on Android were able to use a highly skilled, most of the time, existing workforce that was able to program in Java by simply making the API of the underlying operating system, including graphic libraries and all the rest of it, very similar, if not completely the same, like to the existing JVM. Of course, Oracle didn't like this, so they dragged Google in front of a court, and now it has come to the final session.
Yes. Okay. Cool.
So by the time this goes out, I reckon there. I think the High Court or the Supreme Court. No, the High Court. The Supreme Court has two options: either they can take a final ruling on this, or they can defer this back to an inferior court. So let's see.
Indeed.
Of course, with any final decision being taken, that will certainly have a potentially very severe impact on the corresponding copyright laws, never mind on the open source movement as such, because of the implications, essentially. Because if Oracle would gain the upper hand, that would mean that you cannot reuse existing APIs for your project to some extent. Which is, of course, a dampener for any innovation. Okay, I think we are almost done with the questions. As I said in the beginning,
there's quite a few more, right? But
There's quite a few more. There will be B-sides. We are taking feedback at Linux at, of course, the known email address, which is feedback@linuxinlaws.eu. And Martin, of course, now wants to plug the merchandise store, the merch store, as it's affectionately known. Why don't you plug the merch store?
Okay, sorry, I thought you were in the middle of speaking.
No. Why do I have to do all the talking?
Oh, because that stops you from drinking more beer.
Lame. Very lame.
Where were we?
Martin.
So, yes, the shop. Yes, we have the shop, yes. With the T-shirts and the mugs. And so those of you who would like to support us or actually own a very cool T-shirt with Linux In-Laws and associated contraband on it, please visit the shop on our website, linuxinlaws.eu.
Thank you.
And yes, at the moment, currently, you may need to use Google Translate since it's all in German, but that is okay.
No, Martin, it's not.
Is it not?
No, the URL may have a German top-level domain, but the shop is in English.
The shop is fixed. Excellent.
Yes!
Good job, man. Okay.
Very good. And Martin, from now on, I think we should conclude each and every show with our motto, because that has been laying to the wayside for much too long. And of course, the motto is
boldly go where no man has gone before. Oh, sorry.
No. repeat after me, Martin. Linux In-Laws, you come for the knowledge, but stay for the madness. Now we do it together. I'm going to do the first part. You're going to do the second part, and then we swap just for measure. Okay. Linux In-Laws, you come for the knowledge,
stay for the madness.
No, you go first.
Linux In-Laws, you come for the knowledge,
but you stay for the madness. This is much better. Okay.
Excellent.
So it has been decided in Series 1, or Season 1, Episode 16, the In-Laws made a very, very important decision. Each and every show will be concluded with the famous motto, available on T-shirts, mugs, and all the rest of the merchandise.
Mm.
Martin will do the first part, and Chris will conclude with the final and second part. And, of course, the motto is just once again for our listeners, Martin.
Linux In-Laws, you come for the knowledge.
But stay for the madness. See you next time. This episode of Linux In-Laws is brought to you by the Transylvanian Cooperative, also known as Vlad and Friends. Ever wondered how your source code can survive the mists of time? Fret not, dear open source contributor. Forget GitHub, GitLab, Bitbucket, and all the other nonsense which promise something that they can hardly deliver on. Only with us, your source code can become truly immortal. All it takes is a small pinch in the neck, some lines of code drained for a good cause from the code base, not unlike a blood donation, a little bit of waiting until the turning, transformation has finished, and the code will not be able to die. Unless a change of license makes it proprietary, of course. Similar to silver or garlic, I am afraid
that there is little we can do about this. Once tainted by this, your coat will perish before long, like every other proprietary coat base. This podcast is licensed under the latest version of the Creative Commons license, type attribution share alike. Credits for the intro music go to Blue Sea Roosters for their song Salute Margaret, to Twin Flames for their piece called The Flow, used for the segment intros, and finally to Celestial Ground for their song Sweet Justice, used by the Dark Side. You find these and other ditties licensed under CC at Jamendo, a website dedicated to liberate the music industry from choking copyright legislation and other crap concepts.
Vlad, how are you doing?
Hello.
Everything all right in Transylvania?
It's a bit chilly, but
not too bad. How are the blood supplies? Running dry, are we?
Indeed. Yes. Send more targets, please. Yeah.
Why are you not drinking beer?
Because it's not good for you.
I agree, but only if you're talking about English ales.
I see. We're doing a bit of a health session at the moment. So.
Why?
Well, because the gym is closed and we're sitting in our desk all day and it's just not very healthy. So,
this is rubbish, Martin. I mean, I'm not your wife. You don't have to convince me, so no sweat.
Hmm. No, it's just an occasional abstinence. It's quite good for you.
Just for today, I see.
Yes, indeed.
Very good.
Well, for the next 2 hours, anyway.
Why not actually cut it short and make it for the next 2 minutes?
Yes.
I just found out actually that you cannot upgrade from CentOS S7 to CentOS S8. The afternoon, so I'm just in the middle of something.
Why are you using CentOS?
Yes.
Why are you using CentOS?
Because I do.
Well, I distinctly remember you telling me that their package repositories are rubbish.
Say again?
I distinctly remember you telling me that their package repositories are rubbish and so on and should be avoided. Therefore,
I'm a RHEL subscription, so the closer I get to that stuff is actually using CentOS.
Okay.
And sometimes, actually, Fedora doesn't cut it, so I need something that remotely resembles RHEL.
You do? Why?
No. Because sometimes the packages in Fedora are just too new, if you know what I mean.
Hmm.
I mean, especially if you have a customer who basically is under the impression that Fedora for production is probably not the best choice.
A customer?
Yes.
How does this work related? Okay.
Yeah,
customers are these people that pay money to companies, and in turn, these companies pay you. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the concept. It's called a job.
I don't do jobs anymore, no.
Fair enough.
No, it's more of a vocation. Anyway.
So let me... If I find the right plug, and then we can get going.
Okay. Before we get going, I can look this up myself, but a CMake list, what do I do with it?
What do you mean?
Well, it's a project description, isn't it, a CMake list, but does that translate into a handy compilation of the whole project easily?
You lost me there.
Okay.
Please wash, okay. Rinse, repeat.
Do you know what a CMake list is? Number one.
Now you're fading, Martin. No, you're not. Sorry. Maybe this is rubbish. Bear with me. My mic. Sorry, you were saying.
Your mic? I was saying, you know what a CMake list is, right?
A CMake list is basically a recipe to produce a CMake file, if I'm not completely mistaken.
Right. Okay. Okay.
And of course, CMake being a system. If you're familiar with the concept,
you broke up there for a moment. How did you do that?
I managed to move away from the router as far as possible. It's quite straightforward. Yeah. Let me change locations once again.
You moved into the fridge, have you?
Not yet.
We're closer to the beer.
Not quite. No, Mr. Wilson, not quite. We're getting there. Okay. You're struggling with some stupid open source code base.
No. It's just a data generation bunch of software written in C++. It's got a bunch of CMake files with it. I just want to see, can I just quickly compile it without having to spend too much time dissecting all the stuff, really, but anyway. Okay, that's fine.
With CMake, the answer is more than likely to be no.
Okay. Why?
Unless the people knew what they're doing, which is sometimes the case and sometimes it isn't. You see, all these new build systems require a little bit of hand-holding every now and then, especially if the code... I mean, you have QMake, you have CMake, you have Ninja, you have Meson, the list goes on. Anyway, doesn't matter. As I said, it's probably it's going to take some time.
Right.
That's right. Unless it compiles out of the box, which is hardly the case in my experience.
Seems unlikely. Yeah. Okay. All right. Fair enough. That's fine. I'll just see how I get on then.
Welcome to Linux In-Laws, Series 1, Episode 16. The one with the count and the questions. Sorry, let's do this again because I have stopped recording.
Okay, that's going to be...
starting now. Rolling. Welcome to Linux in Laws, Series 1, Episode 16. The one with the count and the questions.
Welcome.
How is life down in Transylvania?
Well, the blood supplies are running thin. No, actually, they're running thick because it's quite cold here. Let me just check what I have in the cupboard. The cupboard?
Okay. Sorry. Cut button. The intention was there, but I used your name rather than. No, let's do this again.
Okay. Yeah. It's
okay, rolling once again.
What were you doing? Oh, yeah. Sorry, cut. Yeah.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the binary revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.